Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour about things, you'll go frickin' nuts. We're broadcasting live 5 days a week on AmericanFreedomRadio.com from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny, slave South Pacific. It's frickin' gorgeous down here. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which, according to the Prime Minister John Key, is good for the economy. Now, today we have a very special guest, Mr. John Ansell from Treatygate, and we're having some problem with his connections, as was expected. And so what I'm going to do is attempt to grab his phone number and chuck it in for AFR so we can connect him up via the phone as well. And I've only have a cell phone number for See, this is the frustrating thing.
You're looking
right,
for me, Vinny?
John. Yeah. You're there now for maybe a minute or two, John. Would you be able to quickly flick me your landline number there so we can connect you on that, just in case your Skype drops out again, because this is the fourth or fifth time it's dropped out already and we haven't even started the show yet.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Landline is 499-8877.
04-499-8877. 499-8877. Yeah, so that's 644. Right, I got it. So don't worry, we'll get you connected on that one shortly.
Wellington.
Yeah. Don't worry, man. We got it all sorted. And you just gave everybody who's listening your phone number. So let's hope you don't get a rash of angry calls. And maybe we'll try and edit that out of the archives. Eh? So while we're getting John connected, AFR, can you hear me, by the way? Are you connecting him? Because I'm not sure 100% what's going on because he's dropped off again. I hate this. Really hate this when you have these kind of technical difficulties. Skype's normally really, really good. Just sweet as, no problem. It works. And you got high audio quality. You can do the video and all of that kind of stuff. And on occasions, you get massively, massively technically fracked out. It's like really nasty. Okay, now, speaking of Treatygate, and this is what John's going to be on here today. By the way, AFR, what the frack are you doing? Are we going to connect, John, or what? Are you even there? Are you having water? Are you going to the bathroom? You taking a WikiLeak? What's going on here? Come on, bro. Help me out a little here. He's talking about Treaty Gate. Now, for those of you in the rest of the world who don't know what Treaty Gate is, we are a crown colony, a little country here. And on top of that, the thing that's happened, at least according to my research and experience, talking with a number of Māori elders and so on and so forth, is that the founding document of this country, the Treaty of Waitangi, has not been adhered to, and indeed has been manipulated and a source of revenue for what some kaumātua told me called the brown elite, as it were. Okay, you know how there's an elite, you know, like the evil scumbaggery individuals. You know, well, there's sections of elites in every culture and every society. Okay, now, John, I believe we've got you on the phone now. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm on the phone. I'm also seeing myself on the video. I can see you. I don't know if this is going to last, but anyway, yeah. We're on the phone.
All right, excellent, excellent. Okay, well, I've just been talking about the sort of the treaty and how a lot of founding documents don't get followed in any way to the T, and how now currently there's varying forms of elites that are running the globe, including a quote unquote brown elite, which a kaumātua Māori elders were telling me about. That are now ruling the kind of treaty grievance industry and lining their own pockets with the money that would ordinarily go to the average Māori, who are currently miraculously overrepresented in poverty statistics and so on and so forth. But anyway, let's get on to you and yourself and what it is you do. Could you give a brief background? Because a lot of people listening wouldn't know your kind of background, and we hung out a little bit. And you told me a bit about your advertising past, and I thought it was remarkably interesting, and it gives a lot of depth to your character when people know.
Character, advertising. You don't hear those two words in the same sentence very often.
Not very often at all, but you are pretty exceptional.
Well, Vinny, I started, I guess, as an advertising copywriter. I got involved with the Labor Party in 87, did a campaign for them on the radio, another one in 90 and 93, but I became increasingly disenchanted with the socialists, I guess, and refused to work for them after that. I saw Don Brash coming up for the National Party in 2003, when he started, I think, and put my hand up to do that campaign. And that campaign became quite well known. It was a series of billboards with red on the left and blue on the right. The red represented the Labor Party, and it had the Prime Minister's face. And the blue represented the National Party, the right-wing party, for your American listeners who wear the colours the other way around. But and the most remembered of those billboards, which did make a big difference to them, although they didn't quite win, was one called Iwi Kiwi. And Iwi, for your overseas listeners, means tribe, means Maori tribe. Kiwi is the, you know, name for New Zealanders. So the point then was that the beaches, the word beaches was at the top. Beaches, Iwi Kiwi, Iwi, the Labor Party were standing for Iwi, the tribes and the National Party were standing for all New Zealanders, including Iwi. Well, that's how we explained it. But this, of course, brought accusations of racism. Any time you stand up on this issue in New Zealand, you are called a racist if you don't happen to believe that the country should be surrendered to the part descendants of the rebels who rose up against the state in the 1860s. These are those same families. They're just a minority of Maori. Anyway, I saw this increasingly happening, and I, you know, when I want someone to solve my problems, I usually mean someone else, when someone should stand up and say something. On this particular issue, I thought, well, perhaps that someone might be me, given my association with that issue through the Iwi Kiwi billboard. So I started to study the history to see whether my forefathers were the you know, merciless brutes, the evil colonizers that they've been made out to be in our schools and universities and on our media and anywhere you care to look. And I found that, in fact, the opposite was the case. And so what we are party to, really, for the last 40 years is a con job. I can only call it Treaty Gate because that's what you call scandals. I'd rather be more original. But it's a con job on a misrepresentation of New Zealand history, which makes out that the Maori chiefs were sitting in this sort of South Pacific paradise sunning themselves when the evil British came in and brutalized them. And you get people saying, I mean, it's the big lie principle. It's the Hitler big lie principle. Don't just tell a small lie because people expect politicians to tell small lies. If you want to win, you tell a big lie. So you get people like the Maori Party co-leader Tariana Turia saying that there was a Holocaust in Taranaki, the province of Taranaki. Well, in fact, there were three. The first was the invasion by the Waikato people in 1831, who holocausted a third of the Taranaki, enslaved another third, and another third fled to Wellington. Of that third that fled, 900 hijacked a ship to the Chatham Islands out to the west and holocausted. That really was a holocaust of the Moriori people. About 1,500 of them ended up dying, which was virtually all of them. There were about 1,600. About 1,500 ended up dead. That was a real genocide, a real holocaust, but we're not supposed to talk about that. So I do. I say that the worst thing that the British were supposed to have done in Taranaki was the invasion of Parihaka, which was a village which was set up illegally on land which had been confiscated rightly for the rebellion, for the earlier rebellion. And this village was set up, and the Crown had been patiently asking Te Whiti, who was the self-proclaimed Jesus of Parihaka.
Okay, we seem to have lost John again.
Marshaled horse and went in. Apart from one boy who had his foot stood on by accident by a trooper's horse, nobody died. And so I say, what was the death toll at Parihaka in Taranaki? Zero. What was the death toll in the Chatham Islands of the invasion by Taranaki? 1,572. You point that out to the New Zealand media or in these various constitution debates, in quotes, that we've been having, all one-sided, and you're called a racist. Have I explained myself clearly as to where I've come from? I've gone on
okay.
a bit, Vinny, but...
So basically, big-time ad man actually helped one of the... In fact, both sides of the political stripe come to power... And got disillusioned with both sides of the political strife.
Oh, yeah.
And then for telling the truth, now you get endlessly demonized and called a racist. Is that about right?
All of our parties are, they're both left-wing parties, really. I mean, the Labour Party in the 80s was a right-wing party. This is the equivalent of the Democrats, was a right-wing party implementing a form of Thatcherism or Reaganomics called Rogeronomics here after Roger Douglas. So I was kind of comfortable with that. Then they became progressively reverted to type, and along came Helen Clark, so I didn't like the sound of her. She's now running the UN in part. And she was put there by the so-called right-wing prime minister we have now, John Key, who's really a centrist. A centrist is someone who charts a comfortable path between right and wrong. Well, on this issue, he's dead wrong. He's worse than Helen Clark. He's giving away the country in spades. I mean, what sort of country surrenders itself, not from a position of weakness, not to save its beaten population from unspeakable agonies, not in the face of a conquering horde, but from a position of strength? What sort of country does that? And what sort of country pays reparations? Where do the victors in a war of rebellion, the people who put down the rebellion, Where else in the world do their great-grandchildren pay reparations to the great-grandchildren of the defeated rebels? But that's what happens here down under.
It sounds like, hold on a second, if I was a king, per se, and I were to loan a peasant a shockingly large amount of cash, and then when that peasant dies, I then hold that debt over his children and every subsequent generation of his family. Is that sort of what we're talking about here?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What did we? What have you and I done wrong, Vinny? I mean, I bailed up a guy. In fact, he came to see me. A fellow called Dr. Carwin Jones. Dr. Carwin Jones Boyle, who claims to be Maori. He took issue with the fact that I'd called him a make-believe Maori on my blog because he's basically Welsh. He denies that. And I said, it's an extraordinary coincidence that your father decided to call you Carwin, which is the same name as the Welsh Prime Minister, I understand. But he, you know, I said to him, Carwin, why do I owe you money? You are apparently, you say on your website, you're of Ngāti Kahungunu and Te Aitanga a Mahaki descent. Nothing about Ngāti Cardiff or anywhere like that. You say that you're Māori, and you say that I have to pay, my kids have to pay you and your kids money. Why? And he says, well, for example, my grandmother was prevented from speaking Māori at school. I said, and therefore she was prevented from teaching her kids Māori and their kids Māori, and I therefore can't, you know, don't know Māori to teach my kids, although they're in a full immersion Māori school, and how they'll emerge with any knowledge of the language of the world, I don't know. But anyway, this man who is a doctor thinks that is justification for paying him money. I said, look, I happen to be in a family outnumbered by Taiwanese. My wife is Taiwanese. My stepson, didn't speak Chinese at school either, but she made damn sure that he spoke it at home because she spoke it to him. He ended up with the English prize at a school, by the way, and ducks. But, you know, this is what happens, that the immigrants come in and do really well. The locals just moan about how little privilege they have. In fact, everybody's bending over backwards to indulge them endlessly. You know, it's just this sense of entitlement. It's gone too far. I think we probably all agree that certain injustices occurred here and there, but they've been well and truly compensated for, sometimes four or five times in the case of the Ngāi-Tahu tribe. The Ngāi-Tahu tribe were 2,000 strong in the South Island, 2,000 strong in 1840, and have now been given $170 million with more to come.
Well, hold on, John, we're going to have to stop you right there. Not because it's too controversial, but because we're coming to break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam. Waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. Or the
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, live from New Zealand, governed by our fabulous what's his name? Federal Reserve employee, former John Key, derivatives trader, John Key, sell us out to the UN and destroy the country basically by getting it into massive astronomical quantities of debt, John Key. Yeah, that's what this country is all about. Now, if you have a prime minister who's an international banker, you can be rest assured that pretty much everything in your country will get fracked up sooner or later. My very special guest is John Ansell. And John, what's your website again? Is it treatygate.wordpress.com?
Treatygate.org.com, yeah. Treatygate.org.nz. Treatygate.org.nz. It is, in fact, a WordPress site, but treatygate.org.nz.
Yep. Oh, sorry. You try and...
We just put up the topical... Events of the day. Yesterday, what was it? Oamaru North School. Now, Oamaru is a town in the South Island. The only thing it's really known for is its beautiful Victorian architecture built out of this white stone which sculptors use to make beautiful sculptures all around the place, sculptures. And they make this have this beautiful stone down there and these beautiful buildings, including basilicas and all sorts.
John, hold on one second. Are you able to press the little microphone mute button on your Skype there? We're getting some form of an echo.
Little mute button.
It'll look like a miniature microphone sort of on your Skype there, and if you just click that, it'll turn off your microphone so that you just you just talk.
Okay.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Done. Yeah, so in Oamaru there, the local school, Oamaru North School, has they sent their teachers on a staff training day, professional development. It was, in fact, a Treaty of Waitangi brainwashing session. And they came away full of the joys of, you know, Maori superiority, and they unilaterally decided that the children would be instructed to identify Oamaru not with the stone architecture, the lovely buildings that had been the symbol of the town for the last 150 years, but with some primitive rock drawings, Maori rock drawings, 42 kilometres out of town in a place called Duntroon. The syllabus, the social studies syllabus, now requires the children to regard as the symbol of Oamaru some rock drawings half an hour out of town, and not the buildings that they see all around them, which everybody else associates with Oamaru. It's just one small example of the Maorification of everything. That was yesterday's example.
Now, there was also a element, we were talking about psychopaths on a show a couple of days ago, and what was very interesting is we got into the discussion of race and different groups, and what was interesting is that the way that you divide people is you force one group of people to tolerate another group of people. They'd automatically tolerate them, but because they're forced to tolerate them, they start to hate them. Isn't that interesting?
Well, I'm afraid that is what's happening here. I'm obviously, as somebody fronting this issue, I am assumed to hate Maori deeply. It doesn't go with my brand that I should actually have Maori friends or that actually like some Maori. But that's true of me, and it's true of others, that we do. That's why this is such an uncomfortable issue. You know, we're potentially offending people we've been to school with, people we work with, people we know and like, and the country is being polarized, not because of Maori, but because of a minority of this minority. Maori in New Zealand are supposed to be 15%. There's so much intermarriage now, and that's another interesting factor for people that are supposed to have been so brutalized or so... Or hate the Pākehā so much. There's been an awful lot of intermarriage. There are no full-blooded Maori left, or very few. But, you know, this is about a minority, and I would be very, very happy if, as a result of this campaign, the what I call achiever Maori, the people that live with achiever values like everybody else, rise up and tell the grievers, this minority who are after all the money, that they don't speak for them. Now, I'm very, very pleased that my next meeting in Hamilton, which is our fourth largest city, the meeting has been organised by Tim Wickeriffery, a Maori libertarian, Christian Maori libertarian, probably the only one. But he, you know, he is so strong on this issue, and I'm hoping that others will be inspired by him, and so that it won't be this sort of lone European who is doing all this stuff. There will be a large body of Maori who take the issue on themselves.
Now, here's the other thing. If you don't like what somebody's saying, let's say, for example, you're brainwashed and somebody comes out to you with a very, very hard truth with hard facts, and it really corrupts their entire systemized education system. The first thing that they do is they start name-calling. Right, it's designed to ridicule and to get people to switch off. I've heard a number of interviews with you. You kept getting cut off. You kept getting called names. You keep having people call up and talk about the exact same thing over and over again. And it's like people just aren't willing to listen. It's like they can't hear it because they have purposefully blocked themselves off from facts and evidence.
Facts are an impediment. Facts in New Zealand are regarded as the ultimate inconvenient truths. They really are things to be avoided. Facts like the Moriori invasion and so many other things. The truth of the Treaty of Waitangi, the fact that the real English draft was found in 1989, but has been covered up by the state. And that particular draft makes it clear that the treaty was with all the people of New Zealand, not just Maori. You know, the fact that the principles of the treaty, which were invented in 1989 also, I call it the Treaty of Wellington by Geoffrey Palmer, a Prime Minister at the time, we're supposed to abide by the principles of the treaty. He made them up. They don't occur anywhere in the actual treaty. They're his sort of fantasy of what he would have liked the actual treaty to be. Over and over again, facts are just set aside in favour of the prevailing fantasy. And a lot of people just can't get around this idea, can't get their head around the idea, because they've been brainwashed for 40 years to believe one truth, that somebody could be getting up and saying such supposedly divisive things. Now, I urge people to recognise a great difference between criticism and racism. What I'm into is criticism. But look, even if I was racist to my little cotton socks, it wouldn't matter as long as the things I was saying were true. Truth is what matters, isn't it? Not whether you like or dislike people or not. It wouldn't matter if I hated every last Maori person. What would matter is whether what I'm saying is the truth. But that is, it's taking a while for people for the penny to drop on that. They say, oh, well, he's a racist because he's coming out with these things. He's a racist, therefore nothing he says can be listened to. Now, that's just fundamentally illogical, isn't it? First of all, I'm not racist, but second of all, if I was, it wouldn't matter either.
Well, they're suffering cognitive dissonance. They've had a reality created for them, and they've structured their life around that reality. And what you're doing is you're pulling the support strut directly out of that building that they've closed themselves in on. And, of course, you're the one who's demolished their house. You're a bad person. You're an evil, evil man, John Antle.
Indeed I am. Indeed I am. I shall put my white hat on. But look, this is something that all of the New Zealand elites are doing. Now, you view this from a broader, more global perspective. I'm not an expert on Agenda 21 and all the UN stuff, but I can certainly see how this might well fit in. Because here, it's the political elite, this right-wing Prime Minister who campaigned on abolishing the separate Maori seats. It's our little form of apartheid that we've had since 1876. Campaigned on that and then got in and became the champion for Maori sovereignty by doing an unnecessary coalition deal with the Maori Party. He was looking ahead. I've worked for this man. I couldn't do it. I couldn't take my pay. So I left because I realised he is not interested in New Zealand at all. He is interested in John Key first, the National Party second. Anything else is irrelevant. So he did this deal, which nobody wanted. He didn't even need it to get the majority, but he did it because he thought he was looking ahead to the next election and thought, oh, as things close up between us and Labour, we might need some favours from the Maori Party, so we'll give them everything they want. And so they have. And so now abolishing the Maori seats are off the agenda. We'll probably have more soon after the Maori electoral roll campaign, because Maori here get the chance to decide whether they want to go on the general roll or the Maori roll, and more are being urged to go on the Maori roll. And he's now set up a constitutional review.
Here's another element. I'm sorry to interrupt, but there's something that reminded me. I was listening to you on the radio with John Tamahiri and Willie Jackson, and I called in, but the show ended before I was able to go to me as a caller, and I had two simple questions. Willie Jackson, how much money has been taken from treaty claims just in general? And more, and specifically, just a supplementary to that one, how much of that has filtered down to the ordinary Maori? And Willie Jackson, what kind of car do you drive?
Willie Jackson drives a very flash SUV.
He drives a Dodge Ram.
I went up to Waitangi. I didn't know what was going to happen there. I thought I might have got shot. But I saw him at Waitangi, which is the place where we celebrate our supposedly our national day. And he was driving a very flash SUV, as was Tamahiri. He drives his boy to King's College in the SUV. King's College is probably our flashiest school in Auckland. He claims that the money isn't getting through. I think it's certainly getting through to Willie and to Tamahiri. I was told, I don't know whether it's true, but May Chen, who is probably no friend of mine, was talking in a race debate the other day and saying that John Tamahiri's got $50 million out of this. Now, that's unconfirmed, but look, you wouldn't bet against it. These guys at the top are coining it. The people down the bottom, the stats are just as bad. And they say they use it to justify further money. Hone Harawira said to me, and Hone Harawira is the head of the Mana Party, Mana meaning sort of status in Māoridom. Now, he said to me, oh, you know, it's all very well you talking about a colourblind state and all this, but, you know, our people remain at the bottom. Well, look, if they choose not to accept their privileges, what are we to do about it? I mean, they get privileges galore in New Zealand. I was told that there were no such thing as Maori privileges, so I produced a scroll and unrolled it on TV, and I said, I'm sorry the printing's so small that you can't read it, but there are just so many privileges to fit in. But they use this excuse of, you know, our people are still at the bottom, so we need more money. I said, well, you know, why so? It's obviously not working. You know, shoveling the money at them is obviously not working. It's obviously getting to you guys and no further. So therefore, we've got to do something different. That rather throws them. That's an inconvenient fact, you see.
See, that's exactly my point. Now, if you are a Māori in general, and I spoke to a bunch of Māori chiefs about this issue, and this is what I was saying but before you came on today, was about the so-called brown elite. The chief told me that back in the 50s, I think, the original kingitanga, the chiefs of the time, were married into by a bunch of other people, and those other people basically took over the interests of the Māori chiefs and the kingitanga and all of that kind of stuff, and ever since then have been taking away everything from their people, right? This is one of the kingitanga himself actually saying this, one of the prime bloodlines of the chiefs saying this. Is he a racist?
Oh, they're the racists, definitely. I mean, I can't use the word that Hone Harawira used to describe Pākehā meaning white people. You know what it is, but it starts with M and it's got an F in it somewhere and a K, but I'm not allowed to say it on your program. But
it rhymes with white mother fracker.
Yes, that's right, fracker, that's right. And, you know, that's the way they talk routinely. These guys are thugs and extortionists. Maori used to have some very, very respectable statesmen. You go into the Maori caucus room at Parliament, where I've been, and there is all these wonderful carvings, and there are these four enormous portraits staring down, and they are Sir Apirana Nata, Sir Maui Pomari, Sir Peter Buck, Te Rangihiro was his Maori name, and Sir James Carroll. And these guys, they thought like me. they had the same idea about Māoridom as we do, that separatism is terrible, that they can do it just like anybody else, but they've got to work together. And that's why my brand that I'm developing is called Together New Zealand. We have some wonderful sports teams in New Zealand that beat the world, you know, the All Blacks, the Silver Ferns, the netball team, and they're multiracial teams, and they work together. Nobody says, I'm not passing the ball to you because you're Māori or you're Pākehā or you're Samoan. It's just all in together to beat the world. And New Zealanders take great pride doing that. Why can't our politicians think like that? You know, why does our country have to be split between races? It's ridiculous.
Well, you know, and another element that I want to get into after the break is just how the concept of welfare and having infinite benefits and entitlements actually destroys societies. It actually stops people from being motivated to do something with their lives in a lot of cases. And this has happened, and the statistics really prove it in the Māori community, and it's very sad for these people of great potential. We'll be right back after the break. John Ansell.
La la la.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live in operatic frequencies. My very special guest is John Ansell. And now, John, welfare. What has welfare done to Māori? It's, as far as I see, it's destroyed them in a lot of ways.
It's created a sense of dependency, which just plays on the existing sense of entitlement which they're being sort of brainwashed with.
And it's not just Māori who get destroyed by welfare.
He was the one who warned that welfare would be the destruction of Māori. That was at the time when it was being created in the 1930s, state.
Sorry, John, who warned that welfare would be the destruction of Māori?
The great Māori statesman, arguably the greatest Māori statesman, Sir Apirana Nata. And he was a real achiever Māori. He was a contemporary of Lord Ernest Rutherford, in a recent survey I saw, the third greatest physicist in world history, after Newton and Einstein. Well, he was a contemporary of Rutherford's at Canterbury University, but he chose, instead of going to Europe with Rutherford, he chose to stay in New Zealand and help his people. And he, despite his mana, his prestige, he could not persuade Māori to not accept the welfare, and that has been the ruin, especially in the 1970s when the welfare state was opened up to young solo mothers, and Māori really, unfortunately, took to that. They actually, there's almost an industry of solo mothers getting pregnant, having children in order to collect the domestic purposes benefit. And midwives report this, that mothers attending the birth, somebody was telling me the other day, and they said to their young daughter, they said, see this young mother, this is what you should be doing, getting pregnant and getting the welfare. And this particular section of Māoridom are quite shameless about that. And that is not to say it's all of them by any means, but there is a large section. So Māori are disproportionately represented in the welfare statistics, overwhelmingly represented in the prison statistics, where half of all crime is committed by 15% of the population, the Māori 15%.
Well, there's also a racial group,
but they only commit crime roughly in proportion to their numbers. But welfare has, there's guys lying around smoking dope, collecting the dole, and there's no almost moral call for them to do otherwise. Now, that is not true in the case of David Rankin. Now, David Rankin is a Ngāpuhi chief who is a capitalist. By God, he comes out with messages like, we should take away the money. He also comes out and says that Māori were not the first people here, that there were people when his ancestor Kupe, he's a direct descendant of Kupe, the first supposed discoverer of New Zealand, and he says there were people here when we got here. So David Rankin is a very controversial figure who the likes of Willie Jackson and John Tamahere despise for telling the truth. And he wants the welfare taken away. He wants people to be more self-reliant, like the warriors of old. You know, they come from a strong warrior culture. I'm not so keen on having more warriors around, but the self-determination part of that is admirable, and that's what some of these Māori elders want. But unfortunately, they're not the noisiest ones. The noisiest ones have their hands out the whole time. And they want the money to go to them. No, it's become a disease. It's killing New Zealand, and it's got to be limited. New Zealanders are compassionate people. We're proud of our social welfare state, arguably the first in the world, I believe, to have a welfare state. But that welfare, instead of being a safety net, as it was when the Labour Prime Minister Michael Joseph Savage established it. Were he alive today, he'd probably vote with the ACT Party, the right-wing party, and he would be horrified at how this safety net has effectively turned into a hammock. It needs to be more of a trampoline. It needs to bounce people back into work, but unfortunately, Māoridom, more than any other section of society, have embraced the hammock.
Well, I have a suspicion that because of the warrior spirit that Māori represent, that they are indeed a danger to any kind of tyrannical government that might take root in this country and perhaps get violent. I mean, back in the day, was that a great fear of the British soldiers, of Māori military abilities and things of that nature?
Well, Māori culture is most famous for various forms of violence. And in the 1820s and 30s, there was another genocide, really the inter-tribal genocide that probably claimed the lives of a third of Māori. Tribes just used to love going to war. They used to love eating human flesh when they won. This is the environment that the British came into. A lot of that violence is still around. It's only four generations since cannibalism. I was told that by a cousin of Hone Harawira. She said, "I can say that, but you can't." I said, "Watch me." Look, there's still a lot of violence in young Maori men. And not just men either, but that's got to be bred out somehow. And in the Uruwera Mountains, we had the situation a few years ago when Tama Iti, Maori separatist, and a gang of his mates were conducting, pretty much setting up a guerrilla army. It's been minimized, of course, through the courts and the media, who seem to be just devoted to minimizing any bad stuff done by Maori. I've seen the police affidavit of their conversations. They were planning urban warfare. Pretty dumb about it, but they got sent to prison. They couldn't convince a jury that they were doing that because the Solicitor General would not allow the police evidence to be shown for some technical reason, hadn't got a permit or something. So they got away with that, and they went to prison for a much shorter term for some lesser crime. But look, that's happening. That is happening, and you know, it is possible that if Maori don't get their own way, there could be some sort of civil war. And that's what people are afraid of. And when you have that looming up as a possibility, you can go two ways. You can go the Neville Chamberlain way or the Winston Churchill way. And I say that we have had appeaser governments who live in fear of such things, and they're basically being bullied into giving these radical, violent Maori everything they want. I'm saying that is not tenable. That is not what you do if you love your country. You stand up to the bully, like Kennedy, if you like Churchill had to do. Nobody wants to fight, but sometimes you have to defend your country. Our national anthem is "God Defend New Zealand." Well, I think he might need some help. But I think these guys know that that it can't last forever. They just can't believe their luck in getting all this stuff. And all the welfare and all the treaty settlements, and they'll be claiming the sun next on the basis that Maui, the legendary Maui, threw a net over the sun to slow down its passage across the sky. Therefore, I would say they invented daylight saving, so they should be able to clip the ticket on a percentage of anything that's grown by the sun. This is the sort of game that's been played. I think Maori respect a challenge. They respect people. I get them saying that they're actually respecting me, even though they're going hammer and tongs and calling me things, but they actually respect someone who stands up. They tell me quietly, says, "We'll keep taking as long as you guys keep giving." I say, "I know, that's right. That's why we've got to stop, because it's ruining our country."
Yeah, I was invited down to the Temple of the Four Winds. It's like a sacred site among Māoridom. It's the first journalist ever to be invited down there, like ever. It's been there for a long, 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 long time. Very honoured. And you know what I noticed about all these elders, bro?
What?
They had frickin' good, great senses of humour, and they were cheeky as frack.
Yeah.
Right.
Look, it's been a great practical joke. They are wonderfully humorous people. And like I can tell you something I haven't revealed on my blog yet, but I was rung the other day by a guy called Alan Titford. Now, Alan Titford has been treated disgracefully by the New Zealand state. He's been kicked off his farm in order to facilitate a Maori, a shonky Maori claim on his land. And he has been hounded and harassed by every organ of state. He's had trumped up charges of violence levelled against him. He's the most meek and mild man. Anyway, he went to Jim Bolger's. And now, Jim Bolger was our Prime Minister from 1990 to 96 or so. And he was a great appeaser of the Maori. Now, Jim Bolger was packing up from his farm in Tikawiti and going to live in Waikanae. So the Tikawiti people had a function for him. Alan Titford thought he'd go along. And so did Coral Wetteri. Now, Coral Wetteri was the Minister of Maori Affairs, Maori MP, and he had the misfortune to plonk himself down next to Alan Titford in the audience, which, and he didn't know Alan, even though he was party to a lot of the harassment. He'd forgotten who Alan was. So Alan overheard Coro Wetteri saying to a young Maori chap next to him, he said, "Oh, that's, see on the stage, that's Jim Bolger. We've had him round our little finger for years. We didn't realise how much they were going to give us." And next thing you know, Jim Bolger is coming up and saying to Coro Wetteri, "Ah, komatua," komatua means chief, elder, "komatua Coro Wetteri, I'm not going to shake your hand, I'm going to give you a big hug." So absolute sycophant, you know. And this is symbolic of how it's been for the last 20-odd years, this bending over backwards to appease. You put a cloak, Dover Samuels MP used to say, he's Maori, used to say, you put a cloak on a Pākehā and he goes weak at the knees.
We're going to break, and we'll be right back with John Ansell. Treatygate.org.nz is the website. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live 5 days a week, 2 hours a day. Now, if you are capable of supporting this broadcast, your support is necessary, absolutely necessary. I survive 100% since I started covering the issues that nobody else really has the gall or the balls to cover in explicit detail and give people a chance to just talk about what they know and just sit and frickin' listen. If you listen to everybody, you gain something that mainstream media never provides you with. Perspective. How many perspectives are you taking in? You don't necessarily have to agree with everything on this show, as long as you know what people are thinking and what's really going on in this world. Okay? That's the whole point of the show. If you support it, please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and subscribe for a couple of bucks a month. Give us a regular income so we don't have to worry about, you know, whether or not we're paying the rent next week or whatever, as it is now. Or just make a once-off donation and we'll give you some commercial-free archives there. They're on the website as well. You don't even have to pay for them. How about that? We'll give you something that you don't even have to pay for by paying for it. Right, that's ironic. My very special guest is John Ansell from treatygate.org.nz. Now, there was a couple of things I wanted to remark. As a Pākehā, as one half of a band called the Pākehāchis, which is a Pākehā and a mariachi, I think about Māoridom as sort of like this interwoven nexus of New Zealand. You know, there's it's iconic. really. You know, you think about grass skirts and the dancing and all of that sort of thing. And I think about all the Māori men and women that I've known that have always supported me in what I'm doing here with this radio show. And it occurs to me, they're not the only race in this country being suppressed. As far as I've seen, every single race is being suppressed because there's only a few people at the top of the power and influence structures in this country who have a vested interest in ensuring people do not have real freedom, real independence, because then they would threaten their dominance. That's what's going on here to everybody, not just Māori. John, are you there? Seem to have lost him. Okay. AFR, if you're capable of getting John Ansell back on the line there, we seem to be having a bit of a problem. But anyway, John, if you can hear me, just kind of speak up.
Can you hear me, Vinny?
Yes, I can.
You can? Oh, what's going on here, I wonder? You can hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I've been talking all along. Look, I think there are various ways of diverting the populace, aren't there? And sport is one that we embrace to a great extent here in New Zealand. And, you know, if you can set up a racial squabble, well, that's another one. And they're certainly doing a good job of that. I mean, I talk about apartheid Aotearoa, Aotearoa being the Maori word for New Zealand. It doesn't mean apartheid in every sense of what they had in South Africa, but certainly we have division right through our country now. I mean, now, sometime in the 80s, somebody decided that Maori would be an official language. Now it's so official that our teachers, the New Zealand Teachers Council, instruct their teachers to refer to children not as learners, and that's a comment itself on the quality of the education, but not as learners, but as ākonga. Children are now called ākonga. And, you know, since when, which idiot chose to replace the English word that everybody knows with the Maori word that nobody knows, or hardly anyone knows? But that's what they've decided. They make these unilateral decisions all the time. So the supposed equality of the languages is fast being turned into a total Maorification of everything. We now see that our country has been renamed by journalists and by academics and by bureaucrats as Aotearoa New Zealand. Now, when did that happen? When did we give them permission to do that? You know, what you were saying about education was very true. Balance. You know, this radio show provides another perspective. Now, people can listen to this. They don't have to agree with everything you're saying or I'm saying, but they know that there is this other view. It's a shame that you have to be doing this, but, you know, you don't get that. In our schools and universities, they should be presented with both sides of everything. But they're not in New Zealand, and there's only, you know, it's the socialist Marxist side only, and they have formed a very strong bond with the Maori elite, or the Maori radical elite. So it's a sort of Maori Marxist collaboration against the rest of the people of New Zealand, who probably number at least 80%. But the views of 80% of New Zealanders, and it's always 80% whenever a poll is taken about various forms of Maori privilege, like Maori wards, in other words, Maori seats in local councils and all sorts of other forms, it's always 80% who come out against it. But that doesn't count. 80% doesn't count.
See, we're all not getting treated fairly. If one of us gets treated exceptionally well, have you noticed that? If people all get treated the same, there's no animosity.
A lot of people are hurting these days, aren't they, Vinny? A lot of people are hurting, but it's only Maori that seem to be able to access the special favours, and that is really upsetting those who are not Maori. Funnily enough, you know, there are a lot of poor people who are not Maori because they're not Maori because they happen to be Samoan or Pakeha. Or Chinese, or Indian, they don't qualify for the special benefit or the special scholarship. And
hold on a second.
Affirmative action gone wrong, I think.
What is the definition of racist or racism? Is it being negative to one race, or is it being in particular, or is it being positive to one race in particular? What's racist?
Well, I would have, until you said that and thrown a curveball at me, I would have said a racist was someone who hates a person of another race on sight just for being from that race. But certainly there is another sense of the word that you're talking about. It is racist to patronise, I think, to patronise people. A lot of Maori people contact me from Australia, from Perth, from Brisbane, because they're sick and tired of being lumped in with this griever group and being patronised. They're being, you know, it rankles with them that they should be thought of as so lowly that they have to be indulged with special favours. And that is a form of racism as well.
Not only is it a form of racism, but it also creates racism, because a whole bunch of ordinary New Zealanders who maybe don't know the facts of the manipulation of the situation actually believe through the media that it's all Māori doing this, and they become hardcore racists against Māori.
That's absolutely right. I mean, I know people in my sort of crusade who actually say to me, look, I am racist. I am racist now. You know, because I've just waged a campaign at the local school to get rid of this blinkered, one-eyed historical view, and the tribe that we've been dealing with have been so nasty about it that I am now, this is what this one woman said to me anyway, she said, now you can actually call me a racist because I'm just sick and tired of a lot of them. And I think that's a shame, because that group, that was Ngāti Whātua, I think, up in Auckland. Now, that group does not represent Māoridom. That's just the guys at the top of that particular tribe making trouble. But she is at least honest enough to say that she has become prejudiced against anybody Māori. I'm sure she'd reconsider as soon as she met a nice Māori person. But you know, yes, it is happening. It does happen, and it's a shame, because our fathers and forefathers tell us that they used to work hand in hand with Maori. They went to war with them. They have the greatest respect for them. They got Maori friends. But that's a previous generation. The present generation of Pākehā have been taught to patronise Maori, to bend over backwards, to give them a hand up, and to feel sorry for them. Well, if I were those Maori, I wouldn't be feeling terribly good about that, would you?
I don't think so.
No.
It makes you feel like a belittled child or something,
yes,
like that.
Yes.
Like, oh, do you need a hand? Because a couple of hundred years ago, somebody was real rough to you and you can't sort out your own situation. We're going to help you out for the rest of your life. Oh, you poor little thing. You know, I think that's just freaking insulting.
I mean, I don't know how much longer the excuse my great-great-grandfather lost his land is going to wash, really. I mean, you know, I look at the Chinese people in my family, and bad things were done to the Chinese here in New Zealand. The gold miners that came out, they looked different, they sounded different, and they were treated as a sort of a second-class citizen, almost an animal. But the Chinese approach to this sort of racism seems to be very different. Their motto seems to be, don't get angry, get even. let's beat these guys at their own game, and they're doing it here in New Zealand. If there's any resentment towards the Chinese, it's because they're doing better. and so there's these two different ways of handling age-old grievances. It's just a shame that the Maori way seems to be to forever moan about it and blame somebody else.
Well, the Māori elite way, anyway.
Yes. Yes.
And again, there's like a tiers of puppetry. Let me explain what I mean by that. You got one puppet dangling on the string who's at the end of a Māori board, and what he thinks he's doing is he's helping his tribe by imposing tribal values and words and terminologies and so on and so forth, teaching programs in local schools and helping out people at the WINS offices getting more welfare. And then there's one person above him who's on an even bigger pay grade, and he's negotiating things like massive treaty settlements for multi-million dollars and is getting paid $1,500 an hour to do so. And then you've got somebody up above the tier on him who lives in multi-million dollar mansions and is always fine dining and whining away. And then you've got somebody above him who controls all these massive banking interests and things of that nature or sections of the government. Then you've got people above them who have massive influences and culture and prestige and media to control everything. Yeah. And nobody's aware of each other. There's a whole massive control system that is being implemented here, and it's being done, in my opinion, deliberately to divide everybody. Okay, if you're Māori, I'll just come out and say it. You're freaking awesome, and you don't need the government. They're a bunch of That's useless right. criminal sociopathic scumbaggery mofos anyway, and any benefit that a criminal scumbaggery mofo offers you, I can guarantee you, they're only offering you something because they want to take something from you, and they're using it as bait against you.
Absolutely right. Now, the problem here is tribalism, isn't it? All societies have gone through their tribal phases, and it ain't healthy, you know, including ours, including mine. I don't know where you're from, but probably England or Ireland or Scotland or somewhere. That's where I sort of hail from way back.
We had
our clans and our tribes, but it doesn't work. Maori, you see, are still in that, and they've been encouraged to go back into tribalism by this Treaty of Waitangi claim process, which they decided in their unwisdom to distribute the money by tribe instead of by individuals. So suddenly people had to re-engage with their tribe, which they'd long forgotten about or some cases didn't even know about, if they want to get a share of the money. So it's a sort of reformed tribes, neo-tribalism. And the characteristic of a tribe is that everything is justifiable in the cause of your tribe. And that includes treachery, lying. I mean, treachery is an acceptable characteristic in Māoridom going way back in warfare. You know, you invite someone in, you wave the white flag, invite them into your pa to shake hands and make up after a battle, then you slaughter them all. And that happened time and again, and that's okay in the interests of the tribe. And that's what's happening now, is you get all sorts of dishonesty happening in the interests of the tribes. We've evolved a bit since the days of tribalism, and now we have nationalism, and you can argue about that. But that's where we've evolved to. At least our entire nation is together. But when you're embracing tribalism, you've got all these different factions, and they're all stabbing each other in the back, and it's not healthy. But that and it breeds dishonesty, and that's what we've got in New Zealand. That's the essence of the problem, really.
Yeah, and guess who gets caught up in the whole process? The average person. They're not receiving any actual benefit from this grievance process, are they?
No, you talk to the average Maori, they don't get anything. In theory, they might qualify for kid might qualify for an education scholarship. Some of them are quite ashamed of that, but you know, if you're given free money, you take it. But generally, the money goes to, as I understand it, the young bright ones to go through university and become advocates for the tribe and spend the rest of their lives trying to screw more money out of the white man. That's where a lot of the money is going, sort of breeding intergenerational greed and resentment and a sort of an us and them mentality. It's us against the white man.
And that's got to be similar
for any country.
It sounds very similar to the way doctors and lawyers come into the world. Usually their father will be a doctor or a lawyer or something of that nature, and they go to the finest schools, and they wind up having a case of superiority amongst other people, having never really experienced any real hardship in their lives. And these people go on to dominate society, lusting after power and control because they've never had to feel any empathy or compassion.
It's an iwi elite. Now, you see, the Māori have made, they're an intelligent race. They made great use of the great gift of British law, and they've now sort of resolved in some ways their intertribal hatreds, and they've combined as pan-Māori to use the great gift of British law against against the coloniser and screwing him for all he's worth. And so you have a generation of iwi youth being bred, actually, to be the next generation of takers. And they're doing really, really well at it. But, you know, this can't really...
It can't go on forever, ladies and gentlemen. John Ansell is my guest. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations. You made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah.
But I'm here now. So what you wanna do?
Huh?
How many dudes you really know? And flow like this, like this, like this. Let's do it. How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this? Not many, if any.
Welcome
not
back.
Many, if any. How many dudes?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to the one and only Vinnie Eastwood Show. How many dudes you know roll like this? How many dudes you think flow like this? How many mother frackers can host a show like this? Not many, if any. It's Vinnie. My very special guest is John Ansell, and a thought occurred to me over the break, John.
Yep.
Have you ever noticed that the way that people wind up wasting their lives and having a lot of regret is if they're told a big lie and they're trying to fulfill that big lie in the belief that it will actually help people. And then later on, they realize that the things that they were trying to do in order to help people were in fact the very ideas that were deliberately deployed in order to destroy their people.
That's the classic political thing, isn't it? I mean, I think everyone who has an interest in how the world runs wants to help people. It's just that their idea of caring, their ideas of caring may differ. You get a lot of people who start off over on the left there thinking that the way to care is to give people lots of money. As they get a bit older, they migrate across the divide. Well, I think this is... Unfortunately, this is what Maoridom have embraced. The less wise among them think that the shoveling money at philosophy is what works. I relate it to being a parent. You know, if your kid says, you know, can I have endless chocolate? The socialist will say yes because it makes them feel good and it makes them feel good to be loved. The person on the other side will say, actually, no, you won't thank me now, but it'll rot your teeth, and you'll thank me later, and you defer the thanks. Well, I think that's the responsible way to go, and for that you're called, you know, you're called a heartless right-winger or in my case, a racist or whatever. I hope that as a result of what I'm doing, Maori will be a lot better off. If we were able to make a difference, if we were able to get the achiever Maori dominant in Maoridom, then we would be doing God's work, wouldn't we? I mean, I'm not religious, but that would be a wonderful thing to behold if Maori, who are currently far too heavily represented at the bottom of society, if they were to rise up in the image of their great leaders of the past, who unfortunately seem to all be dead. Now they're following these shonky thugs and extortionists. Well, if we could get them to follow the best examples of their people, we'd be doing them a great service. I've just looked at something that I wanted to raise, because what's controlling New Zealand is a sort of giant squid of about eight different elites: political, academic, bureaucratic, legal, judicial, iwi, media, and church. And this is the point. The church are meant to be the ultimate carers for people, but the Anglican Church in New Zealand is at the forefront of apartheid. They call themselves the Anglican Church of Aotearoa, comma, New Zealand and Polynesia. In other words, with that comma, they see Aotearoa and New Zealand as being two different entities and Polynesia being a third. Now, that is apartheid, isn't it? And if the church, who did so much for Māori in the 1800s, when they were just, when they first arrived, they did so much. Christianity pretty much cured Māori cannibalism. It gave them another option. But it's very sad to see that the ultimate carers, the church, are sort of leading the charge in the direction of Aotearoa apartheid. In New Zealand, you see, we pride ourselves on being such lovely people. You know, when you live on an island, you can get fairly deluded about these things, and you're very conscious of yourselves. I say that before we can cure the racism here, we have to cure the nicism. The nicism is what I call this relentless desire to be nice to everybody and make no distinction between the people, between whether the people we're being nice to are also being nice to us. And you have these cunning griever Maori who are basically taking us for a ride, and they think we're mugs, just like Hitler would have thought that Neville Chamberlain was a mug. In New Zealand, unfortunately, we have in Parliament a chamber full of Chamberlains, as I call it. And that is, there's this huge reluctance to do anything which tackles this problem head on, because it might involve not being nice. So that's that. It's that perverse thing you were talking about. Sometimes in life, the right thing is the opposite of what it seems to be.
You know, in fact, I'm starting to find that to be life's recurring frickin' theme, John.
Yeah, and we, people like you and I, who bring this to people's attention, are condemned as haters and wreckers and racists, and that's just another thing that's the opposite of the way it seems to be. I believe that I am the most caring, the most caring person towards Māoridom imaginable, because I am taking a risk and going out on a limb and telling them to pull their socks up. And that's a very hard thing for a non-Māori person to do and to think he can get away with. And I'm not getting away with it. I'm being heavily criticised. But I feel it's the right thing to do. And well, that would be true of many of the causes on your program, wouldn't it?
Well, it's like bravely crossing the Rubicon. Nobody else is doing it, are they?
No, well, that's why I thought, you know, I always look around and think, someone ought to do something about this, and what I really mean is someone else. But, you know, sometimes in life that someone turns out to be you, and at the age of 55, I've developed some boldness that born of intense frustration, I guess. I'm not a brave person, but I just feel in this particular case that someone is, that it can be me, it ought to be me, to at least try and act as a catalyst. And so that's why we do stuff, I guess, but I've been pretty much a coward up to now as regards standing up for what I believe in.
Yeah.
But this is too important not to stand up to, because this is the steady surrender of a nation here to basically a gang of fractional descendants. That's what I was going to mention before, these intergenerational grievers. I mean, one of them is called Sir Tipene O'Regan, as you would know, of the Ngāi tribe. Well, he was Steve O'Regan, IRA supporter, when he was at university. He is 15/16 Irish, and his daughter, Hannah, who's now Hannah, is 1/32 Maori. But when she was asked by a well-known New Zealander what she intends to do with her life, she said, "I want to help our people." And the well-known New Zealander said, "What, the Irish? They don't need any help, do they?" She said, no, our people. She honestly believes that she's Maori. Now, so being Maori is more of a religion here. It's not a distinct race. All the full bloods have more or less died out now because of the intermarriage. People are Maori by choice, and good on them. I mean, I don't decry people wanting to be Catholics or Muslims or Buddhists or Maori. It's a nice, warm, fascinating, fuzzy culture, warm, fuzzy culture. There are nice dances and songs and so on. Too much of it is oriented towards violence, in my opinion. But if you want to be Maori, that's fine by me. But don't hold your hand up and expect to be reimbursed for the sins of your fractionally related ancestors. That, to me, is just dead wrong.
I was just
and
thinking
of course, when you say that, then I'm accused. When I say that, I'm accused of eugenics, which is Hitler's thing. You know, it's blood quantum. How dare you refer to my blood quantum as though it's somehow relevant? Well, I say it's very relevant. If your name is Steve O'Regan or Carwin Jones, and you're holding your hand out for money from your fellow New Zealanders, when you are almost fully Welsh or Irish. You know, that is very relevant, I think.
Yeah. Well, eugenics got a bad name after World War II. That's why the American Eugenics Society changed its name to Planned Parenthood and has since killed about 80 million black and
well,
has since killed about 80 million
to
black
ask those
babies.
Questions. It just feels like such a con, doesn't it? When so many of the leading Maori, and I've got a slide on my wall here which I'm using as reference, as I talk to you, and there's Peter Sharples, and I've got her alongside a character from Coronation Street, the program, called Ina Sharples, and on my slide it says, he's a good lad, he's our Peter. Peter's dad, or granddad, I think, came from Bolton in the north of England. Tariana Turia was Tari Woon when she was at school. She was the daughter of an American, and so on and so on. Ranganui Walker's father is Lebanese. You know, I mean, there's just intermarriage, and there are no, you know, I don't have two cultures, but all Maori have two cultures. I go back, for better or worse, all the way back to England on both sides, or back to Britain on both sides, but all Maori are bicultural, which is ironic. We're led to believe that our country is bicultural, when it isn't, it's multicultural. And in New Zealand, multicultural, I don't think, is nearly as bad a word as it is in Europe with the rapid Islamization, the radical Islams coming in, Muslims coming in. Here, you know, we are quite a comfortably multicultural society. It's ridiculous to claim that we are a bicultural society and that there was this partnership between Maori and Europeans. There wasn't. A treaty does not have partners. A treaty has parties. But there's this sort of, as a result of the Treaty of Wellington 1989, or the principles of the treaty, we are now instructed to believe that the treaty was a partnership, that Queen Victoria elevated to the rank of equal partners a bunch of cannibal communist warrior chiefs. Now, Queen Victoria was not of that disposition, I don't think, at the height of the British Empire. The Treaty of Waitangi was a sort of property for protection agreement, which basically said that the British will run things, but Maori will keep their property and they will have equal membership of the British Empire, which was a remarkable gift for a native people at that time. Now, if I might continue, because it's just continuing a train of thought that I've got into, did the chiefs of 1840 think that their property included the inventions of the white man 100 years hence, namely the 4G radio spectrum, which they now claim a share of? You know, there's a word in the treaty, the word taonga. Now, that word has been absolutely magnified beyond belief to mean anything we take a shine to. It actually meant their property. It meant property procured by the spear in the dictionary current at the time. But because of that word being so inflated, now Maori are making a claim on absolutely everything and quite shameless about it. This aforementioned Welshman was telling me that, you know, why shouldn't Maori have a share, be given a share of the 4G radio spectrum because it's always been there? I said, yes, but you wouldn't have found it in a million years, mate. At least your Maori side, not your Welsh side, they probably would have. But you know, how can you say that with a straight face? And yet they can. As you say, Maori have a tremendous sense of humour. And what this is a tremendous practical joke on their part. And as long as you can keep a straight face, while Chris Finlayson, the Attorney General and Minister of, well, I call him the Appeaser General, While you're moaning to him about how hard done by you've been, as long as you can keep a straight face, you'll get everything. So it's a practical joke, Vinny.
Well, you believe that, absolutely. Now, here's another element that I wanted to get onto. Fathering. You mentioned this idea of if you're dealing with people and they've got problems and the issue of parenting. Do I want infinite chocolate? No, I don't want infinite chocolate. Well, I'm sorry, you're not going to be allowed to have it because it's not good for you and you'll thank me later and you've got to take a little bit of a knock on the chin now. And incidentally, there is a massive defathering of New Zealand just in general. And I think it's also particularly struck Māori hard. And what I found, statistically speaking, if you don't have a father figure, like a strong father figure in your life, you're something like seven times more likely to gain a criminal conviction in your time.
I can link that to a man in Nainai in the Hutt Valley called Billy Graham. Now, not the evangelist Billy Graham, but in some ways he is. He does his evangelizing through boxing. He has a boxing gym, and I took Don Brash out there once when I was working for him to see the wonderful work that he's doing with the local boys. Crime in Nainai is way down, graffiti and all the other forms of crime. He lives opposite his gym is opposite the police station, and the police have a lot less to do as a result of Billy being there. And so many of those boys are fatherless boys, Māori boys. All the tough guys in Nainai are in his gym being taught. You know, he says, take your cap off, look me in the eye, you know, you don't mess the toilet up, you do all these things and we'll get on fine. But no swearing. He's a Christian man, is Billy. And I was thinking, well, gee, you know, Don made a speech about it that I wrote, and you know, if there were Billies around South Auckland and Porirua and all over the place, there would be a lot less crime and a lot more Māori boys would have father figures. Because, yes, you're absolutely right. The welfare state and the incentive that it gives young mothers to have babies in order to get the dole, what then happens is that the father can be cast out, an abusive boyfriend comes in. It just happens all the time, everywhere. And the cycle begins. But if you know, the whole sort of socialist feminist plot, if you like, has diminished the role of males generally, and I think now we're seeing that is not a good thing when it comes to parenthood. There does need to be a strong father figure around. Now, unfortunately, too many of the Māori dads are abusers, gang members, and so on. So the fathers aren't much good as a sweeping generalisation of that part of their community.
Unfortunately,
there are guys,
John,
around like Billy who can.
We're coming to break, John. Unfortunately, we'll be. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment here for today, for this week of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Now, all the archives are available at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com/2013.html. That's thevinnieeastwoodshow.com/2013.html. That will give you the entire year's archives, all available there for you for free. 1 hour versions, like first and second hour, the full shows, and also short clips of the best segments from each shows. Pictures of the guests. So every time we have a guest on a webcam and they laugh at some point and appear to be enjoying themselves, that's the screenshot I decide to take for their picture. So it looks like everybody's laughing and having a freaking good time, which we are. And why the frack shouldn't we? Everything else seems to be going to hell. Why can't we just have a few laughs about how fracked we are? I'm a very special guest, John Ansell.
Thanks, Benny. I hope I've done some laughing because there's been a few technical problems, and I one of the things is I can't hear when you're going to a break, so I think I've just been raving on into the commercials.
Something tells me you'd keep doing that anyway, John.
Yeah, probably. What are we going to talk about now?
You know, we've covered the thing with a lot of scope, and this is how I like to do the shows as well. Now, what I'd like to do is, perhaps sometimes things don't come up in conversations, even though we'd like to say them. You know, there's never an appropriate moment, or maybe people might think we're a little bit crazy for saying it. You know, one of these extreme kind of things that we've seen that are very interesting, but we're just not sure if people will really take it the way it's intended. And so doing, we hold it back until an appropriate person who's perhaps a lot more understanding, who might know what we're talking about.
Or more reckless.
In my case, that would be the case. So do
me
you have
too. I said once to a journalist that Māori have come from the Stone Age to the Space Age in 150 years and haven't said thanks. That got me in a power of trouble, but I think it was true, and I shouldn't have said all Maori, of course, although that's probably true from where they were. They've actually done extraordinarily well. That's what I was meaning as well. I mean, Maori could see that as an insult, or they could see it as a statement of the wisdom of their chiefs in signing up with then the greatest empire on earth and realizing that it's a bit like if a spaceship landed today, Vinny, you know, from Venus or somewhere. My God, the world just changed. What are we going to do? And some of us say, let's kill them. Others say, actually, that might not work because they've got tractor beams and they'd probably just wipe us out. Then one of us says, actually, I've been to Venus and it ain't half bad. And also, these guys are actually being quite nice to us. They're quite happy to do a treaty with us and you know, they'll run things by the standards of the universe because they're more up with the play, but they're going to give us our property and they're going to make us equal citizens of the universe. And by the way, if you think the Venusians are bad, you want to see the Martians. They're really bad, so we don't want to cuddle up with them. And that was how it was in 1840, if you like. The Maori were in fear of the French because the French, very much like themselves, very much like the Maori, they took no prisoners when they were offended, as happened in 1772 when a Frenchman went fishing in the wrong bay and got massacred along with his crew. The response of Marion Dufresne's remaining crew was to torch the entire Maori village. So the Maori didn't want the French. They wanted these soft touches called the British. And they got them, and they did fairly well, I think. But where was I leading with that? I've no idea.
You're talking about something that you normally keep from people for fear that they might misunderstand your radical views.
So I came out with that outrageous statement, but you know, and I wanted to do an ad which said, fed up with the Maorification of everything, which got watered down into, this is for the ACT Party, who I also left. People say I was sacked. I didn't. I wasn't sacked. I wanted to get out because I could see that they were just becoming a committee that was going to compromise everything. So that got compromised down to fed up with pandering to Maori radicals, which that was all right, but the editor of the Dominion Post banned it for asking that legitimate question. So in politically correct New Zealand, such jolting comments are really quite disturbing, aren't they? But I say to people, let's do away with all that. Let's not oppose them. Are you happy to pay a license fee for the use of your country? Because that's what all of this indulgence is. It's New Zealanders being asked to pay a license fee for the use of New Zealand, a Maori appeasement tax. Now, I don't think that's fair when New Zealand is not in great financial shape. You know, if I may divert into economics for a bit, I just did a study where I regarded New Zealand as a state of, if New Zealand was a state of a United States of America, Australasia, Britain, Ireland and Canada, you know, the Anglo world, if you like. If we were a state, we would be of the same population as Colorado, British Columbia, Queensland. We'd be about the middle. Out of 82 states of that fictional union, we would be about 40th. But in terms of GDP per capita, which is the best way we've figured out to measure things, not ideal, but the best we've done so far. In terms of GDP per capita, out of 82 states, we would be 81st, above only Wales. We'd be poorer than Prince Edward Island, Mississippi, and all those other places. So in that position, when we have a Prime Minister who's saying that he's ambitious for New Zealand, but getting us nowhere, we can't afford to fracture further, can we? We can't afford to divert, $1.5 billion a year to privileged members of one race only when we are so far behind the rest of the world as it is. So far behind the states that we identify with anyway. And we're sliding down the OECD as well.
I think we're our telecommunications record is also very shocking. We're like the third worst in the OECD, basically New Zealand is a third world country pretending to be a first world nation.
Unfortunately, that's becoming increasingly true. And where we're also one of the world capitals for teen suicide and teenage pregnancy. I mean, it's a lovely country. We live in a lovely country where a lot of people would like to be. But, you know, things are not perfect. Just recently I saw that graduates, degrees from New Zealand universities are now the least desirable in the OECD. And that is to say social degrees, such degrees as Maori studies, I dare say. Our social sciences are very poor. And that is because of this relentless political correctness, and which manifests also as a Maorification of everything. If we want to continue to be the capital of mediocrity, well, carry on. I don't think that's good enough. I don't think New Zealanders deserve that. I think we need a shake-up.
Yeah. Well, John, we've only got a few minutes left in the broadcast, and I just wanted to say this. Everybody who comes on this show, doesn't matter really what their beliefs are or what they talk about, my job is essentially to make sure that they feel happy and comfortable, and I'll just find agreements with them on what I can. And that facilitates a conversation that allows you to really understand what people really think. And my impression of how you really think about this is out of genuine concern for the country, genuine concern for morality in general, genuine concern for Maori, and a genuine lack of any other option because there's nobody else to do it, and also cop a heck of a lot of flack for it. Now,
well, that's a very fair and compassionate summary, and I do feel like that. I'm not Maori. I don't speak for Maori, and so Maori are not my prime interest. I'm interested in defending the good name of my forebears and my civilization, Western civilization. But, you know, I think we could all progress. I hope Maori do well. Now, I would like to introduce, if we can, the constitutional review just for a second or two.
We only have about 1 minute.
Yeah, well, the wonderful National Party, Maori Party Alliance, has come up with a constitutional review. It is fairly clear, having stacked the panel with Maori radicals, five Maori radicals, five Europeans, that's five Maori radicals to represent 15% of the population, five Europeans, most of whom are very pro-Maori, representing 70% of the population, one Asian person and one Pacific person. So it's heavily stacked. And clearly they are wanting to entrench the Waitangi Treaty, the Treaty of Waitangi, into the Constitution. Once that happens, then all other New Zealanders become second-class citizens forever. That's really what got me going. When you asked me before, I forgot that bit. But that's the bit that roused me into action, the constitutional review, the threat that there will soon be no going back. We'll have to bribe the tribe for permission to do absolutely anything under the terms of the wrong version of the Treaty of Waitangi, not the real equitable version that was discovered in 1989, or at least the draft for the Maori version. The Maori version is the real version, and the Maori version says nothing about things being for Maori only. It says all the people of New Zealand and makes no reference to forests and fisheries being owned by Maori. Now, the reason the state don't want that known is because they were in the business of giving away the forests and the fisheries at the time when that other draft was found. So the constitutional review is something that every New Zealander really who's listening to this needs to make a submission on and tell their MP, their national MP, that they don't want a bar of it. That they want a country where all citizens have the same rights, live under the same rule, vote on the same roll, and if their taxes are to be spent helping people, they should be spent helping people according to their needs and not their race.
In other words, actual racial equality. Isn't that interesting? John Ansell, ladies and gentlemen, treatygate.org.nz is the website. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you again sometime, assuredly.